Welcome to Get Sleepy, the podcast where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. My name's Thomas, and I'm your host. The way this podcast works is about as simple as it gets. Just pick an episode, press play, and get comfortable in bed. We'll take a moment to relax, and then I or one of my friends will read you a bedtime story that's designed to gently grasp your attention and guide you to sleep. The more you tune in to get sleepy, the more effective it will be at putting you to sleep. And you can always revisit past episodes on nights when we don't have a new one ready for your ears. So make sure to listen every night on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Now I hope all of you listeners are feeling okay and you're well and you're healthy. And with everything that's going on in the world at the moment, it's important for all of us to take that extra bit of care for ourselves and for others around us as well. And of course, a good night's sleep always helps. So hopefully by listening to Get Sleepy tonight and every night if you can, you'll find that you are able to drift off to sleep that bit easier and wake up feeling refreshed and feeling happy. Now we'd love if you'd consider following us on social media. And not only that, when you find us there, you'll be able to vote on which stories you'd like us to work on next, along with various other ideas that we'll be putting out on our social channels. Now for tonight's story, we'll be exploring an ancient Greek myth that tells of how the earth came to have horses and olives. But before we get to the story, let's just take a moment, as we always do here, to get our bodies and our minds relaxed. So settle yourself into bed and ease the weight off of your muscles as you let the bed support your body and your pillow support your neck and your head. Laying in bed is just about the only time we tend to give our whole body a break and a chance to recharge. So be thankful for that opportunity and know that simply by laying down in bed, you've already begun the process of rest and recharging for tonight. Now, with your eyes closed, just let your breathing slow down. And visualize the day just gone in your mind. Think about when you woke up this morning, what you had for breakfast or how you prepared for the day. And then carry on without judgment, visualizing through your day. Almost like your own personal highlight reel, for your eyes only. And as you replay these events, you can let them go and clear your mind, one by one. Until eventually, you reach the here and now. Watch as you rest in bed, settled, calm, and sleepy. See your face relax, your body warming up under the covers, and your shoulders sinking down as you let the events of your day drift away. And now for tonight's story. It begins on a hill by the Mediterranean Sea, where a group of early dwelling humans live. The men and women are sitting around a fire in the cave that they call home, settling in for a restful night. On a steep, stony hill in Greece, there lived in early times a few people who'd not yet learned to build houses. They made their homes in little caves, which they dug in the earth or hollowed out among the rocks. They lit fires in the caves for warmth, and their food was wild animals, which they hunted in the woods, with now and then a few berries or nuts. They did not even know how to make bows and arrows, but used slings and clubs and sharp sticks for weapons, and the little clothing which they had was made of skins. They lived on the top of the hill because they were safe there from the savage beasts of the great forest around them, and safe also from the wild men who sometimes roamed through the land. The hill was so steep on every side that there was no way of climbing it, save by a single narrow footpath, which was always guarded by someone at the top. It allowed them to observe the surrounding land, both for intruders and food. One day, when these people were hunting in the woods, they found a strange young boy, like no one they'd ever seen before. His face was so fair, and he was dressed so beautifully, that they could hardly believe him to be a man like themselves. His body was so slender and graceful, and he moved so nimbly among the trees, that they fancied him to be a serpent in the guise of a human being. They stood still in wonder and alarm when they saw him. The young man approached and spoke to them, but they could not understand a word that he said. Then he made signs to them that he was hungry, and they gave him something to eat and were no longer afraid of him. Had they been like the wild men of the woods, they might have captured him at once, but they wanted their fellows to see the serpent man, as they called him, and hear him talk. And so they led him home with them to the top of the hill. They thought that after they had made a show of him for a few days, they would kill him and offer his body as a sacrifice to the unknown being whom they dimly fancied to have some sort of control over their lives. But the young man was so fair and gentle that, after they had all taken a look at him, they began to think it would be a great pity to harm him. So they gave him food and treated him kindly, and he sang songs to them and played with their children and made them happier than they'd been for many a day. In a short time he learned to talk their language, and he told them that his name was Cecrops. He had been shipwrecked on the seacoast not far away. He told them many strange things about the land from which he came from, and to which he would never be able to return. The poor people listened and wondered how he opened their minds to a vast world beyond their knowledge and understanding. It wasn't long until they began to love him and to look up to him as one wiser than themselves. He knew ways of making their lives easier and better. So they came to ask him about everything that was to be done, and there was not one of them who refused to do his bidding. So Cecrops the Serpent Man, as they still called him, became the king of the poor people on the hill. He taught them how to make bows and arrows, and how to set nets for birds, and how to catch fish with hooks and nets. He led them against the savage wild men of the woods and helped them build protections against the fierce beasts that had been so great a terror to them. He showed them how to build houses of wood and to thatch them with the reeds which grew in the marshes. He taught them how to live in families instead of herding together like beasts as they'd done before. And he told them about great Jupiter and the mighty folk who lived amid the clouds on the mountaintop. As time passed, the poor people and their way of life began to change dramatically. Instead of homes and caves among the rocks, there was now a little town on the top of the hill, with neat houses and a marketplace, and around it was a strong wall with a single narrow gate, just where the footpath began to descend to the plain. But despite all of this, the place, this little town on the hill, still had no name. One morning, while King Cecrops and his wise men were sitting together in the marketplace and planning ways to make the town become a rich, strong city, two strangers were seen in the street. Nobody could tell how they got there. There was only one way into the town after all, and the guard at the gate had not seen them. No one had ever dared to climb the narrow footway without his leave. But there the two strangers stood. One was a man, the other a woman. And they were so tall, and their faces were so grand and noble, that those who saw them stood still in bewilderment and said not a word. The man had a robe of purple and green wrapped around his body, and he bore in one hand a strong staff with three sharp spear points at one end. The woman had wonderful grey eyes, swirling like thunderclouds. In one hand she carried a spear, and in the other a shield of curious workmanship. Eventually, an entire crowd formed around the two strangers, who seemed to barely even notice the growing group of townspeople surrounding them. Nobody talked, for all were struck with wonder. Until in one moment, when the man seemed to arrive in his present place, as if his consciousness had been in some other world all along. "What is the name of this town?" asked the man. The people stared at him, as if they hardly understood his words. Then an old man answered and said, "It has no name. We who live on this hill used to be called Craney. But since King Cecrops came, we've been so busy that we've had no time to think of names." "Where is this King Cecrops you speak of?" asked the woman. "He is in the marketplace with the wise men," was the answer. "Lead us to him at once," said the man. And so they did. When Cecrops saw the two strangers coming into the marketplace, he stood up and waited for them to speak. The man spoke first. "I am Neptune," he said, "and I rule the sea." "And I am Athena," said the woman. "I give wisdom to people." "I hear that you are planning to make your town become a great city," said Neptune, "and I have come to help you. Give my name to the place, and let me be your protector and patron, and the wealth of the whole world shall be yours. Ships from every land shall bring you merchandise and gold and silver, and you shall be the masters of the sea. My uncle makes you fair promises," said Athena, "but listen to me instead. Give my name to your city, and let me be your patron, and I will give you that which gold cannot buy. I will teach you how to do 1,000 things of which you now know nothing. I will make your city my favorite home, and I will give you wisdom that shall sway the minds and hearts of all men until the end of time." The king bowed and turned to the people, who had all crowded into the marketplace. For a moment, the entire town fell silent until the king spoke to the people. "Which of these mighty ones shall we elect to be the protector and patron of our city?" he asked. "Neptune offers us wealth. Athena promises us wisdom. Which shall we choose?"
"Neptune and wealth," replied many.
"Athena and wisdom," replied just as many others.
At last, when it was plain that the people could not agree, an old man whose advice was always heeded stood up and said, "These mighty ones have only given us promises, and they have promised things of which we are ignorant. For who among us knows what true wealth is, or what wisdom is? Now if they would only give us some real gift, right now and right here, which we can see and handle, we should know better how to choose."
"That is true, that is true," remarked the people in response.
"Very well then," said the strangers. "We will each give you a gift right now and right here, and then you may choose between us." Neptune gave the first gift. He turned from the marketplace and walked up to the highest point of the hill, where the rock was bare, and bade the people to see his power. He raised his three-pointed spear high in the air, and then brought it down with great force. Lightning flashed, the earth shook, and the rock was split halfway down to the bottom of the hill. Then, out of the yawning crevice, there sprang a wonderful creature, white as milk, with long slender legs, an arching neck, and a mane and tail of silk flowing in the wind. The people had never seen anything like it before,
and they thought it was a new kind of bear or wolf or wild boar that had come out of the rock to devour them. Some of them ran and hid in their houses, while others climbed upon the wall, and still others grasped for a weapon in alarm. But when they saw the creature stand quietly by the side of Neptune, nuzzling its nose into the palm of his great hand, they lost their fear and came closer to see and admire its beauty. "This is my gift," said Neptune. "This animal will carry your burdens for you. He will draw your chariots. He will pull your wagons and your plows. He will let you sit on his back and will run with you faster than the wind." "What is his name?" asked the king. "His name is Horse," answered Neptune. Then Athena came forward. She stood a moment on a green, grassy plot where the children of the town liked to play in the evening. She drove the point of her spear deep down into the soil. At once, the air was filled with music, and out of the earth there sprang a tree with slender branches and dark green leaves, white flowers and violet green fruit. "This is my gift," said Athena. "This tree will give you food when you are hungry. It will shelter you from the sun when you are faint. It will beautify your city, and the oil from its fruit will be sought by all the world. It alone will make you rich." "What is it called?" asked the king. "It is called Olive," answered Athena. Then the king and his wise men began to talk about the two gifts. "I do not see that horse will be much of use to us," said the old man who had spoken before, "for we do not have chariots, wagons, or ploughs, and indeed we do not even know what they are. And who among us will ever want to sit on this creature's back and be borne faster than the wind? For what purpose would we need such speed? But Olive will be a thing of beauty and a joy for us and our children forever. It will feed us and bring us riches through trade." "Which shall we choose?" asked the king, turning to the people. Without a single objector, the people all called out in favor of Athena and the olive tree. "Be it so," said the king. "The name of our city shall be Athens." From that day, the town grew and spread with such vibrance and vigor. The olive tree grew fruit of wonderful flavor, and from the seed of the fruit, more olive trees sprouted. The town became healthy and prosperous. Soon there was not room on the hilltop for all the people. So houses were built on the plain around the foot of the hill, and a great road was built to the sea 3 miles away. And in all the world there was no city more fair than Athens. Word about the city spread quickly, bringing travelers from far and wide. They came with their goods of great value and wealth, and parted with them willingly for the oil from the olive tree. In the old marketplace on top of the hill, the people built a temple to Athena. the ruins of which may still be seen. And the olive tree grew and nourished. And when you visit Athens, people will show you the very spot where it stood. Many other trees sprang from it, and in time became a blessing both to Greece and to all the other countries around the great sea. As for the horse, he wandered away across the plains towards the north and found a home at last in distant Thessaly beyond the river Peneus. It had been said that all the horses in the world have descended from that one which Neptune brought out of the rock. From time to time, rumors may be heard of travelers spotting the great animal with silk flowing from its tail and mane, who wanders the woods with great majesty and magical wonder. But the truth of those rumors is something we may never know.